Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. This hour on the program, is the word criterion vanishing? Is every standard on which I might base a judgment now a criteria? Also, if you don't know what the word trope, T-R-O-P-E, means, should you feel dumb? I did. Maybe I shouldn't have. And if I'm overwhelmed by some event, overwhelmed, can I also be underwhelmed or even whelmed? We're talking about language this hour. Back with us, the senior editor of the American Heritage Dictionaries, publishers of the American Heritage Dictionary of the English Language, newly revised, and the new Curious George Dictionary. Welcome back, Steve Kleinerther. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Fred. Thank you for having me on. And once again, I have to say I'm very impressed with the completely new introduction you've come up with. Every time it's something different.
We never recycle introductions on this show. We're at 614-292-8513 if you'd like to ask a question or if you have a comment about words or word usage or pronunciation. And you can email us at openline@wosu.org. Well, so I was pleased to see someone self-correct the other day on my program because he was talking about his criteria for doing such and such a thing. And but what he meant to say was criterion, singular, one of the criteria. And he self-corrected, which I thought was nice because I wondered if that distinction, singular criterion, plural criteria, was disappearing.
Certainly you see that it is disappearing. However, this change is still new enough that it will catch people's attention. It's similar to the word phenomenon, which you sometimes see pluralized as phenomenons or phenomena. However, criteria shouldn't be used as a singular noun. And if you say something like a criteria, people if they know better, will probably look at you funny. So if you're, you know, speaking in a formal setting, you might want to avoid it. That said, who knows what it's going to look like in several decades or centuries. These words have a way of changing over time, but I would say to be on the safe side, you would want to keep criteria as a plural.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about language changing, which, of course, it does all the time. And I'm thinking about non-standard pronunciations. Of course, library, it's very clear that the first R is sounded library and that the word is not library. But do you note in a dictionary, as a matter of interest or just a matter of scholarship, that there is a non-standard pronunciation, library, where it's not sounded?
In our larger dictionaries, our 8-pound American Heritage Dictionary, with many of these pronunciation issues, we will include a usage note that explains what the item of interest might be. For example, at library, I'm looking in our Guide to Contemporary Usage and Style. Many of these notes come from the American Heritage Dictionary. We mentioned that there's a library and a library where the R has been lost through dissimilation. And in the note, we can, give a little linguistic information why sometimes these sounds are dropped.
Okay. We're at 614-292-8513. We're lining up your calls right now to talk about language. Well, I wonder about accents. You know, I remember hearing a piece on National Public Radio about people in Brooklyn taking a class to expunge their Brooklyn accents. So apparently they thought we would judge them negatively in terms of those accents. Are you finding that accents are being erased through simple, mass media homogenization and other trends in the United States?
Well, I'm not a sociolinguist, so you would want to speak to someone to that. But I would say that accents, in fact, are not going away. I think people may be conscious of them. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you travel to different parts of the country. Here in Boston, you can hear several different accents. There isn't one Boston accent. There are,
sure,
are a whole bunch here, depending on what part of the metro area you're from. Certainly, if you go to the Midwest, you'll hear people speaking differently than you do out here. So accents still do exist. I think people may be conscious of them. One reason why television might not be as great of a leveler as one might expect is that you've got people moving to Los Angeles from all over the country, mm-hmm, and the accents don't always go away. Certainly, you can spot a Chicago actor often. Sometimes not all of the broad vowel sounds go away.
like happening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you take a really broad Midwest accent, like you'll hear in Ohio, if you're from above I-90, that stretches, you know, across Michigan and Wisconsin and Chicago, you know, where I'm from originally, you'll hear that. But for sure.
You got rid of yours.
Oh, it's not so much that it wasn't intentional. It was having moved out to Boston and living out. I've been out here 12 years now. It just kind of it went away. It wasn't until I went back to visit my family after having been out here for quite some time that I really noticed my family's accent. I haven't picked up a Boston accent, but I've lost a lot of distinguishing characteristics of my Michigan accent.
And not intentional, though. People didn't point at you and say, "Why are you talking so funny?"
Well, they kind of did. I have a friend named Ron, and when you say that Ron, like you're from Chicago, it causes them to grimace in pain.
Yeah, really. Let's go to our callers. Tom is on the line. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I recently heard someone say, "What we are seeing is not patriotism. What we are seeing is jingoism." What can you tell me about jingoism?
As a word, jingoism, I'm looking at it right now.
Or jingo.
Jingo ultimately, okay, here we go. This is interesting. It's much like the word geez or other words that are used to less profane. Jingo ultimately comes from an alteration of the word Jesus. A jingo is one who vociferously supports one country, especially one who supports a belligerent foreign policy or a chauvinistic patriot.
That's what I suspect.
With chauvinism. And interestingly, the word is an alteration, you know, much like geez or gee whiz.
Very interesting.
Okay, Tom? I did not know that until I just checked that.
Excellent. I didn't. Thank you, Tom. Thanks for your call. Hello, Barbara. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I have a question regarding the use of is or was, present and the past. In other words, two people talking to each other. One asks the other one a question, and let's say that they're asking, "Well, how old are you?" And the person says, "I'm 30. And then a third person comes along and asks the second person, "Well, what did he say?" Now, the question that I have is, does he say that he said he was 30 or he said he is 30?
You can say either. In one, you are using direct speech.
Yes.
In the other, you are treating the speech event as a past event.
Yes.
And either is perfectly acceptable. In one case, you would be emphasizing the direct quote. In the other case, you would be emphasizing a reporting of an event that happened in the past. So either is correct.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I just thought that the person is 30. He still is.
He still is. If you said he said he was 30, you're referring to the Speech Act.
Uh-huh.
You're talking about an event that happened in the past, and so I suppose there's a slight nuance to it, but it is not incorrect.
I see. So both would be correct.
Yep.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. Stephen Kleiner, the senior editor of American Heritage Dictionaries, 614-292-8513. Email to openline at wosu.org. Hi, Joe, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like our guest comment on the incredible profusion of very specific collected nouns. Pride of whales, pot of lions, brace of pistols. Why do we have that incredible profusion?
I think somewhere along the line, someone thought they were interesting or cute, and then so you get people like Lewis Carroll and other writers just coming up with different ones that showcase their wit. Again, you might want to speak to a sociologist as to why that's the case. As a lexicographer, we merely record what people come up with as opposed to explain why they do so.
Yeah, one of the things I wonder, Joe and Steve, is why we call an individual soldier a troop. You know, your troops, plural. Yeah, the troops. But you know, you're in the media now, we say you know, troops. Not instead of the word soldier is rarely heard.
There is a singular trooper.
Yeah,
which is used on occasion.
Occasionally, you do hear trooper. Yeah, rarely on the media though. I think that's an odd thing.
Yeah, a troop, of course, is a collective, a group of soldiers, and it is under the case that one is starting to hear this more and more in the singular, and that's something we're tracking. Mm-hmm. But you're right, there's a whole wide array of these collective nouns, and they're fun, and you can quiz people on them. A sloth of bears, or a sounder of boar, for example.
Absolutely. Well, Joe,
very interesting. Thanks
a lot. Thanks so much. And now we have Robert. Hello, Robert.
Hello. I have a question about redundant words and their existence or their proper use. Words like oftentimes and irregardless. I was corrected by a very proper Englishman during a formal dinner about my use of the word oftentimes.
Right. Most languages have a great deal of redundancy built into them, and that's because when you're speaking rapidly, if you have some redundancy, you're more likely to be understood. That said, there are certain redundant things that third grade elementary school teachers are likely to wrap your knuckles for, and these things become ingrained in our heads as irrepressibly and irrevocably wrong. Irregardless is one of them. That is probably one of the top 10 things that will never, ever change simply because there's just this huge group of people who say it's wrong, 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 and that gets beat into people's head. So irregardless is non-standard only because everyone says it's so. And one of the reasons they say it's non-standard is, because of this redundancy factor. But there are plenty of English words that would seem to be redundant if you view them the parts. For example, the word unravel means exactly the same thing as ravel. Debone means the same thing as bone. You don't see people screaming an uproar over debone and unravel, and you probably never will. But for some reason, irregardless has captured the fancy of pundits and teachers, and it just probably will never become accepted simply mm-hmm. because everyone says it's wrong.
Robert, when you said oftentimes, what was the problem that somebody had with that?
He said, he turned to me and he said, really, Robert, often is quite enough. And
wow.
And I said, okay.
Was this a friend of yours?
No, it was, again, I was in London, England at a formal dinner party in front of a whole bunch of people, and he corrected me.
Well, that was
awfully
rude.
Never forgotten that word. I haven't used oftentimes very much since then.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that word, is there, Steve? It means frequently.
It's actually a legitimate word. Oftentimes, OFTTIMES. There's frankly nothing wrong with it. And even though this is what I do for a living, I still think I would point out that it's great having a good vocabulary. It's excellent to be able to use the precise word that you want at any given moment. But one thing I try to emphasize in my interviews and such, that it's really not a tool to pummel someone else over the head with, unless you're an editor and it's your job to make the writers under you write correctly, or you're a teacher and you're instructing students how to write according to a particular standard. But again, you've got me as opposed to Miss Manners or someone else on the line, but there's no point in being rude.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoy your program very much.
Robert, thanks so much. Steve Kleinadler.
But there's absolutely nothing wrong with oftentimes.
Nothing at all. No,
I
absolutely.
Don't know what that person was. Maybe he was just, who knows?
Who knows? Steve Kleinadler, senior editor of the American Heritage Dictionaries, publishers of the American Heritage Dictionary of the English Language and the new Curious George Dictionary. Jeff is here. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. When I moved to Columbus, I started hearing people say something needs, like, oh, that needs changed, or that
yes.
needs fixed.
Yes, you did. It is a standard
to
version. It's an artifact of the migration of the Pennsylvania Dutch to the Pennsylvania area, western Pennsylvania, eastern Ohio. It's in the Pennsylvania Dutch language, and it got translated directly into English, and you will see people from this group say things like the car needs washed, the carpet needs vacuumed. It's a dialect region of the United States, and it's well studied linguistically, and it's particular to that area.
Okay, Jeff.
So is it acceptable? When it drives me nuts when I read it in a memo from one of the people working for me.
I don't know if it would be considered standard English, but within that dialect group, it's certainly a regular regular syntactic pattern. I would probably advise, you know, if they were writing for a national audience or something along those lines, they would probably want to avoid it simply because it's not familiar outside of that dialect area. But within that dialect area, it's a perfectly well-formed linguistic structure, much like in Chicago, Milwaukee, and other areas that were founded heavily by a German population. You'll hear things like, are you coming with, which, you know, from the German mit, kommen, kommst du mit. It helps to find a dialect region, and there's mm-hmm. a very strong one there in western Pennsylvania and eastern Ohio.
Sure. Jeff, thanks for your call. And hello, Bill.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I've been waiting months to ask this question. I've listened to NPR regularly, and especially the news, and want to know who at NPR changed any WS to sound like noose.
Noose.
Yeah.
Well, who says it that way on NPR?
Most of the reporters, including ones here in Columbus.
NPR Noose?
Welcome to NPR News.
Well, Stephen, what do you think? I mean, I hear people
It could be possible that they're not saying that, and you're hearing. If you are starting to experience hearing loss, you might be missing some of the voiced consonants at the end of the words. And I say this as someone who is fairly deaf. I normally wear hearing aids myself, and it's the same principle by which sometimes you have to spell out words, F as in Frank, S as in Sam. You might not be hearing the voiced consonants coming out, and they may be coming out unvoiced to you. That's one possibility. Perhaps they actually are saying noose. I haven't heard that myself, but if that is happening, I mean, it very well could be happening. That's one possibility. Fred, do you find yourself saying noose?
I've got a couple of ideas here. There are two ways I think of the word as being pronounced. One is news, like news. The other one is news.
Yeah, that's a different thing.
Some people
palatalize the N depending on what part of the country they're from. They're both acceptable, news or news. That's a separate issue from what this gentleman is talking about.
So, Bill, are you hearing noose like a noose you hang somebody?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it sounds like.
Huh.
And I've not experienced any other hearing problems that I'm aware of. But the next time I go to the doctor, I'll certainly ask about that.
I'm not saying that is the case. It is a possibility, or maybe
sure.
It actually is the case. I know there's certain things I mishear on the radio, although a lot of times you don't even think about it. Your brain just automatically corrects it. But who knows? That could be the case, or maybe they're actually doing it, and if they are, I don't know why.
Bill, I hear news, like with the Z sound at the end, certainly NPR News. But noose, I can't say I've heard.
Well, listen.
I will listen
in the future. Yeah,
I will listen.
I appreciate you taking the call. This is a question I've wanted to ask for a long time, and
okay.
I've asked it.
Okay,
you have
Bill.
A great day. Enjoy your program.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
And 614-292-8513 with your language questions. And also open line at WOSU.org. You can email a question or a comment about our language. And this whole idea of pronunciation, Steve, is very interesting. When I was in grammar school, I had a speech teacher. Once a week, the speech teacher would come in, and she counseled us when we're saying words like who and which and what and where to sound the WH like which, what, where, white. And I've never done that.
Yeah, that's also common to a dialect region. You'll find people, there's an area of Texas where that's very common, the which distinction. It is also associated with stage dialect. You know, if you see your plays on Broadway's in the 30s and 40s, and you know, it's stage speak. That distinction between which and which is becoming ever smaller. It does exist in certain parts of the country, though. If you watch King of the Hill, you'll hear the character say, "You know, I'll tell you what."
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It still exists in parts of the country.
Okay.
It is odd to teach that to students in a part of the country that's not in that dialect boundary, however. But there you go.
I guess you would think of this as, what does the word elocution mean?
With an E, elocution.
Yeah.
It is, let me, before I botch the definition, I'll give it to you exactly how we got it. The art of public speaking in which gesture, vocal production, and delivery are emphasized, which makes sense if you think that orators and other lecturers are trained in elocution.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I guess that's one thing she was training us in vocal production there and being very, very specific about it and very, very nice about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Is there anything, any difference between if somebody is adventuresome, you know, in their life or somebody is adventurous? We've got those two different words, and I'm not sure I can come up with a distinction.
There might not be.
Oops, you just said oftentimes. Now, that British fellow would have corrected
you,
certainly.
It's gotten into my head now.
Yeah, right.
And I've checked several sources. It's perfectly okay. What happens is when you've got words coming into English, we also have a variety of suffixes suffixes to make things adjectives. You'll see a lot of times words can take I-C-A-L or O-U-S.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, again, part of the redundancy of English.
When we hear people say something like, the true facts of this situation, it surely sounds redundant. If it's a fact, it's redundant.
But I think, you know, or free gift is an even better one because that one really gets on people's nerves. With true facts, I mean, granted, facts are true, but with the spin that people in the media often undertake nowadays, one could conceivably understand how some facts might be less true than others in an Orwellian sense. So there, and again, someone who's saying true facts is probably spinning just as much as the next person, but they're trying to overemphasize the truth value mm-hmm. of what they're saying. Something like free gift, a very common redundancy that people like to harp about, is another instance where they really want to overemphasize it. And sometimes you have to balance whether you're being redundant or you're being emphatic.
Emphatic, yeah. If it were in print and you were an editor, would you knock off the true?
It would depend on the context. What I was, it would depend on what I was editing. If it was ad copy for a show based on the X-Files or something, yeah, I'd probably keep it. If it was ad copy for a reference work, I'd probably delete it.
Mm-hmm. Back to our callers now. Anne is here. Hello, Anne.
Hello. Hey, I came into your whole program a little bit late, so somebody else may have already said this, but something that I've heard lately, and I've heard on NPR too, I guess I'm like the previous speaker, is the use of the word way as a substitute for the phrase a lot or much. So it's like, oh, this was way worse, or this was better. And it drives me nuts. It sounds like a Valley Girl or something.
It's been around for almost that long. You'll hear the same thing with so. That's it's a piece of social slang that has hung around for a while, taken on a life of its own. I believe we've actually, I think we enter it as informal. Let me check. But yeah, we listed as slang very extremely. We have a quote from Fortune magazine: can they really make a car that's way cool? I know there are linguists, there's a set of linguists, I think from Toronto, who did an interesting study on the similar use of so. They tracked its use throughout the series, the television series Friends. It's a piece of slang that has had some staying power more so than other slang.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I was surprised is I didn't expect a journalist to use it because I expect their language to be a little more formal. And I have heard it a lot. I guess maybe I noticed it more just because I'm noticing it more. But I didn't expect to hear that from it.
They may have picked it up on it in an attempt to sound hipper or cooler or fresher or whatever. Hopefully they would realize that this slang is now probably close to 20 years old. If they wanted to sound less stodgy, or they might try to pep up their copy with things such as that.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Anne, for your question. Steve Klandler, American Heritage Dictionaries. We're going to pause for a brief message. Just callers, don't go away. We're going to get right to you after these messages at WOSU 820, NPR News.
Next time on Day to Day.
Nowadays, as soon as something pop off, people like grabbing their belt.
For some teenagers, pulling a trigger is as easy as raising a fist.
People will fight and that would be it.
But now you pick up a gun, you kill somebody and get it over with.
Teenagers talk about guns and settling the score.
Killing is the new fighting.
What?
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 Next time.
What's the new what?
On Day to Day.
Day to Day begins in 30 minutes starting at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning, I'm Amy Jurevich. It is 72 degrees at 11:31. Thanks for joining us for Open Line. If you want car advice, you should talk to an expert, or you can try your luck with Click and Clack on Car Talk. Every Saturday at 11 a.m., the knuckleheads from Car Talk Plaza attempt to answer listeners' car dilemmas. Waste another perfectly good hour with Car Talk. On WOSU 89.7 FM, NPR News and Classical Music. Don't forget, you can now get all the day's news from All Things Considered and the business news from Marketplace now on WOSU 89.7 FM, weekdays from 4 until 7 o'clock. In the weather forecast for today, scattered showers and thunderstorms throughout the day, a high of 80. For tonight, mostly cloudy with rain likely throughout the night and a low around 60. For Independence Day, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain showers throughout the day and a high of 75. And now, back to Open Line.
Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. Steve Kleinadler is with us. He's the senior editor of the American Heritage Dictionaries, publishers, they are, of the American Heritage Dictionary of the English Language, newly revised, and the new Curious George Dictionary. We're at 614-292-8513. Callers, let's get right to you with your questions about words and word usage and pronunciation. You can also email a comment or question to openline at wosu.org. Hi, Christina. You're with us.
Hi. I just had a question that my father's told me for many years that continue on is improper, and I have never found anybody else to agree with me that continue on shouldn't be used.
Use it in a sentence. How would you use that?
Like in news, we're continuing on with weather.
Mm-hmm.
And my father, it's usually news when he hears it, and he'll get so mad, and he says that's how he wasn't taught. And I even went to broadcast school and talked to my teachers, and they said, no, that's not incorrect. And I just wanted something to maybe back my father up.
Okay.
I have never actually heard that one, and I've heard a lot of do this, don't do that type of things. But once again, this speaks to the power of our third grade teachers. When we're taught something at that age and it's drilled into our head, we tend to remember it. So it doesn't surprise me that your father is so vehemently against this if his teacher pounded this into his brain. Although that, having said that, I was not aware that there was an issue regarding the word on after continue. For whatever reason, his teacher seemed to think that it was a problem.
But it isn't a problem.
Would it make a difference that he was in third grade in 1957 or, you know, if it changed from then?
I have never heard of this being an issue. For whatever reason, you know, obviously his teacher probably taught over a fair amount of period of time. And sometimes, you know, different individuals have certain ideas about what is right and what is wrong. I personally don't see anything wrong with it. You can certainly use continue without the on, but having that, there are plenty of words like on and up and down and back. You can revert back. That one I've heard about. Mm-hmm. That's redundant. You don't need to do that, although people say it all the time. I haven't heard continue on, but it falls within that pattern.
Christina, use it if you could. Could you use that in another sentence? Because I haven't heard that much either.
Okay. Usually, and I'm sorry, I only have the news, but it's like continuing on and with – if I'm going to continue on going to the store after I go to the movie theater.
Yeah. Gee, Steve, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Neither do I.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Christina.
Tell my dad he's wrong.
Okay, yeah, definitively now, yeah. Hi, David, you're with us.
Yeah, hi. I have a question. Do you know of a term that describes or is the name of the cardboard inner tube part of a toilet paper or paper towel roll?
Wow.
I would say the cardboard tube that holds the toilet paper.
Okay. My wife hails from Northeast Ohio, Salem, Lisbon, Alliance area. And those folks up there, every person I'd met, referred to that tube, and I'd never heard it before myself, I'm from Columbus, as a dirter tube. And that's the sound a kid makes talking or blowing through the tube. Dur-dur, dur-dur.
So interesting.
They called it a dirter tube.
My goodness.
Never heard it.
Don't know how they spell it? D-E-R-D-U-R-D-U-R with a hyphen or not, but she always said, yeah, we played with dirter tube.
And you heard numerous people say this?
I've met friends of hers and people in the area have referred to it that way.
That's really interesting.
Well, there you go. You've got a small little dialect area centered around Alliance, Ohio.
That actually names something very odd, because to the rest of us, it's that cardboard tube inside.
Now,
right.
Isn't there something called the dictionary?
I'll get off the phone.
Sure.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, David. Isn't there something called the Dictionary of
American Regional English?
Yeah.
Yes, out of Madison, Wisconsin. If I can check it there. It's not in my office, or I can ask the editor there if she has heard of this.
That's really interesting. That's got to be obviously regional. I've never heard that anywhere. Fascinating caller. We have an email from Carol here. She says, you were talking about redundancy, and a redundant phrase that drives me crazy is when local news reporters say arson fire. She says it is either a fire or arson, or it could even be a suspicious fire, but not an arson fire. Steve, what do you think?
Huh, that's interesting. Because arson is a crime, and it's the crime of, you know, setting something on fire on purpose, I suppose you could use arson, although it is a noun, as an attributive adjective to distinguish a fire from one that was, say, a lightning fire.
Mm-hmm.
I think one would usually say, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I don't know that it's wrong. It does. I agree. It sounds odd, but I guess it would be kind of like talking about a strangulation murder versus a stabbing murder or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by the rules of English, where you can take just about any noun and make it an attributive to modify another noun, like a desk chair. It does work, but I agree, it sounds odd.
You know, I was looking in the American Heritage Dictionary here, and you list arson only as a noun, not as an adjective. Yeah.
Well, no. The fact of English is almost every noun can be used. They're called attributives.
Uh-huh.
If you showed that every noun in the dictionary can also be an adjective, you would double its size.
Okay, sure.
Pretty much any noun in English can be used as an attributive in front of another noun,
mm-hmm,
to modify it.
Okay. Next caller here. Hi, Cheryl. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Steve and Fred. I have three quick questions. First, about the use of were and was and expressions like, if I were a rich man.
Right.
My instinct is to say was, but it doesn't sound right. I'd rather say, I mean, the ear says to say were.
Right. Technically speaking, were is the correct word. What you're using there is the subjunctive, which is a mood that in English pretty much only exists in the verb be. And in the subjunctive, which happens in a lot of if clauses, you take were instead of was. It's something that's sort of hard to explain to speakers of English unless they also speak a foreign language in which the subjunctive is very robust. Any of the Romance languages, for example. I didn't grasp the subjunctive at all until I started studying Spanish, and then it made sense.
Okay.
So it's a vestige of a mood that is very rarely used nowadays in English.
And now another caller touched on the expressions like those clothes need washed. And the teachers in our school system, and we're not in a German area, are teaching the kids those clothes need washed instead of those clothes need to be washed. And like, can you talk about whether that should be taught in education? I thought it was more colloquial
It is particular, again, to Western Pennsylvania and Eastern Ohio. And
mm-hmm.
The teachers, if they have grown up there, would have no reason to know that it's not what is spoken outside of that area unless they've lived outside of that area.
Right.
It is correct in that area of the country. I mean, if I were teaching there, I would probably point out the fact that outside of this area, people say these clothes need to be washed.
Right.
Within that area, it's how English is spoken. And if you're if the teacher is not from outside that area, that might not be anything that they're aware of. For example, you heard me just a bit back when I was talking about the subjunctive. I used the word nowadays. I was going to say anymore, which is part of my native idiolect, but I know that people shoot that down. This is how people speak anymore, which is something that sounded completely normal to me until I moved away from Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or bought and bred. Is the bread homemade? No, it's bought. Outside of the area where that's spoken, that sounds horribly incorrect. It's something that I've taught myself not to say when I'm speaking to national audiences or not talking to my family, but, you know, I go home and visit my folks and, you know, eating is involved and invariably bought and comes up. So much like that, within the range that it's spoken, it's correct in that area. Yes, go ahead.
And is that basically like a whole nother world? I mean, is that the same sort of thing you're talking about when people say a whole nother?
A whole nother is slightly different in that it's not confined to any one area of the country. And it's, in my mind, it's a little more slangy or informal, you know, whole nother ball of wax, what have you, which you will find if you're trying to impart a homey, colloquial sound, you'll use that in your writing. Technically, you don't break up another, but you'll find it in certain contexts where you're trying to convey this homespun, folksy air.
And then my final question was, can you tell me a little bit about the leave go and leave it be instead of let go and let it be?
Yeah, there's a distinction there which I have never been able to deal with because I'm from a part of the country where they've kind of fallen together. So basically, anytime I need to know the distinction, if I'm editing something, I actually have to go look it up. There is a distinction between leave and let, and it's so completely intertwined in my head that unless I'm looking at a reference book, I probably can't tell you the difference.
Okay.
I'll be perfectly honest. There's a large part of the country where the meanings have either collapsed or switched, and there is technically a correct way. And it's as an editor, there are certain things I know that when I'm editing, I need to check a reference work. Lie and lay is the same way. I should know the difference between lie and lay, but if I'm going to use the past tense, I have to look it up just about every time.
Okay. Thanks, Cheryl, for your questions. I guess this idea of the car needs washed or needs fixed, I'm getting emails from our staff members here. Amy Jurevich said, I grew up in Pittsburgh, didn't even realize I was leaving out the to-be verb after need.
Precisely.
Until someone pointed out to me, Tyler Adams, who is screening our phone call, says, me too. So
the Pittsburgh area is pretty much the central spot on that that wide dialect area. And yeah, I mean, if you've never been pointed out, if it's never been pointed out to you that this is how people speak elsewhere, you're not going to know. So it's standard to that area.
It's so funny because something can be completely unconscious if you grew up in a certain area. That's the way it is. And to everybody else, it says, where's that verb? Where
I remember when I was editing the Bees at one point, and I came across the word boughten, and we show it as regional or non-standard or something. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is a completely normal word.
Yeah, right.
And I had to be shown, no, in fact, it's north of I-80, probably north of I-90,
Sure. Steve Kleinother is senior editor of the American Heritage Dictionaries. They publish the American Heritage Dictionary of the English Language, which is newly revised, and the new Curious George Dictionary for Kids. What the heck is that, Steve, by the way?
Anyone out there who's got – you'll hear me talk about the books, but you'll rarely hear me push one the way I'm going to push this one now. If you've got a child who's 3, 4, 5, loves language and loves Curious George, this is – it is such a nice-looking – wonderful dictionary. It's got about 600 words appropriate to that age, and every single word, there's six to a page, is accompanied with a picture of George, the man in the yellow hat, or some of other of George's friends, with a very simple, sometimes very simple sentences explaining what George is doing. For example, at the word taste, there's a picture of George in a birthday cake, and it says, George tastes the cake. It's a really wonderful way for a parent to sit down with a child who's just learning English and getting the child used to dictionaries. And it's really, really a beautiful book. It's available at online bookstores, brick-and-mortar bookstores. If you've got a 3-, 4-, 5-year-old, I think they'll love it.
Mm-hmm. If you have a language question, 614-292-8513 or open line at WOSU.org for your email, comments, or questions. Mike is on the air. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Fred. I actually had just a thought just occurred to me when the statement was being made about where you talk in other places, and it has to do with the word American. And when if you go down to Central America or South America and you've got a speech and you're talking to an audience and you refer to yourself as the country as America, you kind of get looked down on because they're Americans too. They're Central Americans and South Americans. And so I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Yep, but context is everything.
Yeah, but my question had to do with the word got and gots. And it really is irritating to me. And maybe it is one of these redundancies where people say, have you got any cereal? You know, and you go, what's wrong with have you any cereal? I mean,
I think to a lot of people, have you any cereal would sound really British. Did you grow up in Europe or in a British speaking area?
No, I grew up in Detroit. But my mom is and dad were both sticklers for English. So.
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing wrong with God, and it's something that the British often simply cannot comprehend how people here in the United States will say things like, have you got or have you gotten? To me, have you, whatever you just said, to me, that sounds very British, like something I would expect to hear on the BBC. It's just a facet of American English.
Okay. Well, what about adding the S on it?
Gots?
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing from kids. They say, like, gots any such and such? And I don't know if that's new or if, you know, what that's all about.
It is the reanalysis of got as a present tense form, which therefore the gots is the creation of a third person singular, gots. That it exists in some English, American English dialects, including some African American vernacular English dialects across the country. What's happened is got has been reanalyzed as a present tense form.
Okay,
Mike, right. Thanks for your questions. We're here with John. Hi, John, you're on the air. John, are you here? Okay, we're not hearing from John. Let us go on to Faith is next. Hello, Faith. Okay, we're not hearing from our caller, Faith or John. Let's see what's going on here. Let me try one more. Hello, Pat. You're on the air.
Hi, Fred. This is a great show. I really enjoy it. I have a curiosity about language, and when people use it, it prompts me to ask questions like, you used the phrase, thank you so much. How much is so much? And Steve used the verbiage, I myself, referring to when he said he uses a hearing aid. So I'd like for you to speak to those.
Thank you so
comments.
Much is purely idiomatic. It's become a fossilized statement that people say. It doesn't refer to any specific quantity. It's an idiom, and by definition, idioms are fossilized chunks of the language. I myself is a good example of emphasis. I didn't want the caller who I suggested might suffer some hearing loss. I didn't want him to feel like I was singling him out for this type of thing, and I wanted to let him know I was part of this category. And then for emphasis, I said I myself. So it was there. You go.
How about you, Fred?
Thank you so much. Well, I mean, as it's an idiom, as Steve said, it's just something.
Idioms don't make sense when you break them down piece by piece. That's why they're idioms.
Yeah.
When you kick the bucket, you're not kicking a bucket. You're dying. That's what an idiom does.
Well, thank you so much. I myself really appreciate your comment.
Okay, Pat, and thank you so much. We have an email from Mark about the dirder tube that we talked about earlier, the tube inside the toilet paper or roll of paper towels. And he says, I too have heard of and used the term dirder tube, and I've never been to Alliance, Ohio. He says, I found several references to the term online, including this one. The dirder tube is the cardboard tube from the inside of a roll of paper towels. It's called the dirder tube because when you were a kid, you would take one and put it up to your lips and hum dirder, dirder, dirder to your favorite tune. So I guess that's we're getting some ratification for that interpretation, huh?
There you go.
There you go. Okay. John is on the line. Hi, John.
Thank you. A question about a word I've heard a couple times on the show this morning. Fred, you haven't used it, but I think I heard it once from your guest. I hear it a lot on NPR now, and that word is usually used when responding to a question, and the answer is usually prefaced by the word basically. And so it's basically, et cetera, this is how it works or whatever. And my understanding of the word basically, I guess the way I feel when it's used when someone's talking to me is, hey, you know, you don't appear to be very bright. Let me dumb this down a little bit for you. And basically, in terms you'll understand, this is what I mean.
And I think more coming as someone who has to speak off the cuff at great lengths, it's buying them an extra second of time to get their thoughts together.
Agreed.
Much like starting a sentence with absolutely or it's buying you time to figure out what you're going to say. It can have an air of condescension, but that's more on the part of the speaker as opposed to the word itself.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say they're buying time.
Yeah, but then if they're buying time, then it's probably not the sort of thing one would expect folks on NPR to be using. If, you know, these are our correspondents there, they shouldn't have to buy time in a lot of cases.
Well, again, until you are in the position of having to speak at length, you'd be surprised. This is basically improvised. It's off the cuff. I don't know what's going to ask. They often don't know what people are going to ask. And if it takes a few milliseconds to get your thoughts in order, you're going to have certain stock phrases. Absolutely. I probably say a whole bunch of times. On one hand, I am agreeing. But on the other hand, it also gives my brain a couple seconds to catch up and figure out exactly how I'm going to phrase what I'm going to say. A listener can look back and notice these patterns. But until you're in the, in the trenches, as it were, talking off the cuff for large chunks of time, I think Fred can back me up here.
Oh, sure.
It's you do what you need to do to get through the sentence.
Yeah, I think you do. It is a way of buying time, and we all have ways of doing that. Because if you talk extemporaneously a great deal, that time is necessary, especially on the radio, because you don't want any downtime. Yeah.
Certainly better than silence.
Yes.
Better
dead
than
air
silence.
Is to be avoided. Yep. Okay. Thanks very much, Phil.
Thanks, John, for your call. And Julia, you're with us. Hi.
Hello. I would like to hear the guests discuss a phrase we often hear on a local TV news, and that is, we have got breaking news. And the question is, have got.
Once again, have got is an American English construction. In this instance, we have breaking news. I would probably say there's breaking news. Who knows? It's something that British people would find very funny, but most Americans do use to some extent, especially in colloquial speech. We have got breaking news. The fact that you're hearing it on local news as opposed to national news, again, indicates that it's more colloquial in nature. There's nothing wrong with it. Again, even though got rankles some people, it is an integral part of the language.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy your program.
Thanks,
Julie. Thank you.
Thanks for your call. We have an email from David. He says, my question for Stephen, are we destined to continually use the improper use of the word healthy? David says, it's commonplace to say eat a healthy meal, meaning a meal that is healthy for us, but we should be saying eat a healthful meal.
I think the boat has sailed on that one. Although personally I use healthful, we've gotten to the point where healthy, one of the definitions of healthy is also healthful. I think it's too late to the word healthy meaning healthful is so ingrained, and it's constantly reinforced by news and advertising, that that's a word that I think is shifted to the extent that it's now got that meaning as well. That said, personally, I still use healthful when I mean that sense, and I know others do too, but that might be a losing battle at this point.
A losing battle, it is gone. Hello, Annie, you're on the air.
Thank you. I have a question about the word mango. Mm. It is used where I grew up in Appalachia to mean a green pepper, and it also means a fruit.
Yes.
Do you know where, how far that mango use as a green pepper extends in the United States? Thank you very much, and I'll listen to you on the radio.
The mango, I know, does exist as a pepper, and I don't have a copy of the Dictionary of American Regional English. It's right outside my door. If we had a commercial break, I could probably run and get it. I know it is, I think it's wider than Appalachia, but I'm not sure how much.
Yeah, well, the first time I heard that, I thought, what are they talking about? I don't see any mangoes around here. Where's the pepper bin in the supermarket? So it's obviously quite regional. Hey, John, you're with us on the air.
Hi, yeah, I'm calling in support of the fellow that didn't like continue on. It seems to me the choice is between a phrase like go on and continue. So we'll go on with the conversation after the break. We'll continue with the conversation after the break, and it seems really redundant to me to say continue on.
You're right. It's redundant, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong. Again, English is filled with redundancies, so it's either for emphasis or to make sure your message is heard. It is the case that you can say just continue, but there's nothing wrong with continue on.
Okay.
Okay, John. Well, again, another battle lost there, John.
All right.
I'm not sure that it was a battle to begin with.
Maybe another battle to begin with, but thanks.
Yeah, I didn't want to increase the frustration of the fellow by having his daughter tell him it's wrong, yeah. Though. I just
I understand
where he's coming from.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, John.
Okay.
Time for one more. If you're very quick, we can get to you. Hi.
Yes. I just wanted to point out there's a British idiom equivalent to needs fixed. Mm. And that BBC announcers will frequently say that somebody has been taken to hospital, or they are now in hospital.
Right.
Yeah, the British don't use the with hospital or university. There's a set of words where we have the where they do not. It's a different syntactic thing going on. But yeah, you'll find syntactic differences in different parts of the English speaking world.
Yeah, thanks, Mort, for your call. Gee, the other day I heard somebody at the BBC say something that someone was pressuring. You know, we speak of somebody pressuring someone to do something, right?
Right.
But he said somebody is pressurizing someone to do that. And I thought that was
very
strange.
Wow, that's either that was a slip of a tongue or they were creating a very vivid metaphor.
Yeah. I mean, I've never heard that as a part of British English or in English, to pressurize somebody rather than
pressure.
That
may have been a nonce term, but it gives a very interesting mental image of what they were doing.
Absolutely. Stephen Kleinother, senior editor of American Heritage Dictionaries, publishers of the new Curious George Dictionary, among others. Steve, thanks very much for being with us this hour. Always
well, thank
a great
you,
pleasure.
Fred, for having me back. It is always a pleasure to speak with everyone down there.
Thanks to Amy Jurevich at the controls, Linda Taylor, producer, Elizabeth Wick, production assistant, Tyler Adams at the phones. And news is next. By the way, Mike Thompson sits in on the show, hosting on Monday. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD820 Columbus. Streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 is NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from Adam H., reminding you that mental illnesses are common but treatable health conditions like heart disease and diabetes. Stop the stigma. Treatment works. Recovery happens. More information at adamhfranklin.org.